Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Well, hello everyone. Nice to be with you today. I'm Jackie Cooper. I'm Chief Brand Officer and Senior Advisor at Edelman. And today I'm so delighted to be joined by the brilliant Chip Conley, a renowned entrepreneur who has successfully disrupted the hospitality industry, not just once, but twice. First as the founder of Joie de Vivre Hospitality, which is the second largest operator of boutique hotels in the US, and then as Airbnb's head of global hospitality and strategy. Chip's most recent endeavor is the Modern Elder Academy. This is actually the world's first midlife wisdom school dedicated to helping those in midlife make career and life decisions. A New York Times bestselling author, Chip is also an advisor to our very own Longevity Lab at Edelman, our global resource on how we can deliver successful commercial and marketing efforts to win the loyalty and economic stakes of this very misunderstood Boomer X generation. So Chip, welcome to the Trustmakers.
It's great to be here, Jackie. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, what I love about this conversation is that we've obviously been talking all things longevity and all things opportunity. And I'm really, really delighted that our audience gets to get a perspective from you on this. You spent most of your career in the hospitality industry. You founded the Modern Elder Academy in 2018. Can you just sort of explain to our listeners more about that Modern Elder Academy and why you were so compelled to set it up?
Yeah, including why the heck would I come up with that name? So yes, I was a boutique hotelier for a long time, and then around age 50, sold the company at the bottom of the Great Recession. It's a Hyatt brand now called JDV. And I spent most of my 50s as the in-house mentor to the three young founders of Airbnb. Within the first couple of months, this is a long time ago, this is 12 years ago, so it was a tiny little tech startup that most people hadn't heard of. When I was there, I was twice the age of the average person there at age 52. And within a couple months, they started calling me the modern elder. I didn't like that very much because I thought they were making fun of my age. But in fact, they said, Chip, a modern elder is someone who's as curious as they are wise. And you are both a mentor and an intern here. And what they meant by that was I never worked in a tech company before. And here I was now mentoring the three young founders about leadership and strategy and you know, how to run a business and be an entrepreneur. And I found that mixture of being both the alchemy of being both the teacher and the student to be really quite enlightening and illuminating for what you could do in your solidly, mid-50s. And that's really how MEA came about. MEA, the Modern Elder Academy, came out of my experience at Airbnb. I wrote a book called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. And while I was writing that book on the beach here in Baja in Mexico, I had a Baja aha, an epiphany, which was, why are there no midlife wisdom schools where people often in their 40s, 50s, and 60s could reimagine and repurpose themselves?
I absolutely love as curious as you are wise, because of course that's just the most brilliant kind of combination of having something to give, but also having something to learn. And we've launched this Longevity Lab as a resource for marketeers to sort of really understand how we can leverage the very untapped power of the 55 to 72 year old generation. And you know this group so well. And as you said, you've run this academy to help this group really sort of optimize the opportunities that they can have. And you've been such a brilliant advisor to us. Can you just explain in your experience why you see that this is so key for business to focus on this generational segment, especially now? Like, what's going on in the world and what's going on with this generation that you think businesses need to do more of?
Well, in a world in which we're living longer and people are going to be working longer, we need to really look at this from two perspectives. One is the employee perspective, and the second is the consumer. And the employee perspective is a new one. I mean, we are living in an era in which in the United States, by the year 2027, the majority of Americans will have a younger boss. So we've got to figure out this intergenerational collaboration thing and not just think of older people as a resource that just needs to go out to pasture and retire, because quite frankly, we have a labor shortage in many countries. And as a result, you know, we really do need older employees. Also, in an era in which AI has an increasing foundational role in the workplace, knowledge becomes commoditized, and what we really could use is a little more wisdom. And so helping organizations learn how to tap into the wisdom of older employees is really important. And then from the consumer perspective, I mean, let's just be blunt. I mean, 80% of the world's luxury goods are purchased by people 50 and older. And in essence, we have an advertising industry that's sort of enamored with young people, when in fact, the folks who are actually spending the big dollars tend to be 50 and older. So I think both from an employee perspective as well as a consumer perspective, it makes good sense to understand this era. But it's sort of a new era, because in the past, these people 55 to 72 would be either retiring or thinking of retiring. And there's sort of an emerging new elder role for these people, because they're not old enough necessarily to say, like, I'm elderly, but we're not young enough to say that they are a young one in the workplace. And so we need to really understand this generation of, you know, younger boomers and older Gen Xers, given that these people are going to be both spending money and in the workplace longer than before.
I mean, I found the unexploited opportunity just fascinating with that data. You talk about 80% of luxury purchases. We saw a data point of 40 to 50% of all goods and services purchased from 55 to 72. And yet only 5 to 10% of company marketing dollars are targeting them. So right there, you can see a shortfall. We also picked up a data point that we're on average at this age bracket 14 years younger than the generation that went before us. So we're not behaving in the way that older generations have previously behaved. And so I think, you know, to build on your point, there's so much opportunity there. Also, we saw in our data that so many of this age group felt that they were experiencing ageism, which I can say I see all around, and is missing all kinds of opportunity, both in commercial benefit, but also to your brilliant point about wisdom and advice for companies. And you published a really superb article in the Harvard Business Review this summer about why wisdom work is the new knowledge work. And you've referenced here that knowledge is actually just a commodity. The wisdom is the asset now. Can you just talk a little bit more about what do you mean by wisdom in that context of the workplace, and why is it so important now? Because we see a lot of successful entrepreneurial companies having older people on the board, and it shouldn't be about age, or it should be about wisdom. And you've got so much experience about this. So just help us understand the value.
Yeah, if you're going to create a midlife wisdom school, you better understand what wisdom is. So, you know, you accumulate knowledge and you distill wisdom. So that means, you know, some knowledge is something that is also accessible on Google and on AI, and everybody has access to it. But wisdom is something that's often very personal. It's based upon your personal experience. Our painful life lessons are the raw material for our future wisdom. And that means, as you know, if you're getting older, you have more raw material, life experience, maybe painful lessons that you can learn from. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the older person is always wiser than the younger person, because there are lots of older people who have not metabolized or learned from their life lessons, and they keep making the same mistakes. But if you're wise enough to look at your life experiences and then make sense of them, you can create an organization that is constantly learning with a growth mindset. So let me use just a quick example. I have, since age 28, I'm now 64, been doing an exercise every weekend for 36 years now, where I sit down for 20 to 30 minutes and I ask myself, what did I learn this last week? What were my biggest lessons? Often they were painful. They're both personal, professional, spiritual, physical, emotional, relational. I just write down what was my lesson. And then I'd say next to that, right next to that, how's it going to serve me in the future? Now, I've been doing that for a long time. It has helped me to cultivate and harvest wisdom. Now, a leadership team could take this approach. They don't have to do this weekly, but they could actually say once a quarter, a leadership team sits down and says, let's see, there's eight of them. Each one says, here was my biggest lesson of the quarter. Now, that can be a little scary because you're going to talk about something that often went wrong and what you learned from it. But being able to have a team that can actually metabolize their experience and then share it. Wisdom is not just, it can't be taught very easily, but it can be shared with others. And so when I hear the COO in my company talk about a lesson she learned, then I can actually metabolize her experience and it makes me wiser as a result. So I think we're moving out of the era of the Peter Drucker defined era of the knowledge worker, which started in 1959. That's when he coined the term, and knowledge management became a big deal in the 1970s and 80s, into an era in which wisdom workers of all ages who are very capable of cultivating and harvesting their wisdom become more valuable in the workplace.
Do you feel when you have your workshops with the academy that people of our age, because I'm in the same age bracket as you, do you think that people of our age understand that they have this wisdom? Do you find that in some of the academy work, you have to help people feel confident in the kind of contrast of them feeling that youth is the thing and that they're actually needing to be reassured about what they know?
You know, it's really interesting. It's a great question, Jackie, because for a lot of people, especially the ages that you mentioned earlier, if you're sort of surrounded by messages all the time that say, you're over the hill and you're no longer needed and you're no longer useful, you know, truthfully, as we get older, it's not about being youthful, it's about being useful. And we can be very useful in all kinds of ways, but there's messages constantly being told to us that say, maybe it's time for us to retreat. And that's really what, you know, retirement is, technically speaking, in the etymology of the word is retirement is about a retreat. So one of the things we try to help people to understand at MEA is that there are a lot of anti-aging message out there. And there's a lot of anti-aging products. And mostly they're anti-women products, let's be honest, that make you feel badly about your natural process of aging. But as I wrote about in my book last year, Learning to Love Midlife, 12 Reasons Why Life Gets Better with Age, I came up with 12 different reasons, everything from, you know, the acceleration of emotional intelligence that grows with age, to wisdom, to learning how to edit your life, to having more valuing relational capital and how you your friendships more. There's all kinds of things that get better with age. And so part of what we help people to see at MEA is a pro-aging message, because Becca Levy at Yale has shown that when people in midlife shift their mindset on aging from a negative to a positive, they get seven and a half years of additional longevity, which is more longevity than if you stop smoking at age 50 or you start exercising at 50. So helping to be a midlife activist, helping, and I think of midlife as 35 to 75, let's be honest, I think of it very broadly. But what I would say is this later midlife, 55 to 72 that you've cited and Edelman cited, that's a really important era because it's a point in one's life where you have the ability with your life experience to make a difference. But you've got to be curious too. If you're just the old fart in the room saying how the world works, people will say, okay, boomer, and they'll put a hand in your face because they don't want to just hear somebody who's reciting how the world works. That's why the curiosity is important, because we as older people can learn so much from younger people as well.
Yeah, I love that. And actually, my dad was a real example of this because he set up his last business when he was 69. And it was a very successful business. And then he very sadly, after about 10 years of that, had a stroke and it put him in a wheelchair. And so he became part of an enterprise advisory group. And he had a very black sense of humor, and he He said, I would be wheeled in to some young entrepreneur, you know, duo who are about to set up a company. You could see their faces fall and say, God, who is this person in a wheelchair? And within 10 minutes, they forgot he was in a wheelchair because he was funny and he was wise and he was curious. And he kind of did a lot for not just against ageism, but also against disability. A lot of the luxury hotels in London only have ramps because my dad said, just because I'm in a wheelchair doesn't mean I don't want a nice meal. But I think that it's really interesting what we can do to ourselves as much as the perception of others. And I think what you're talking about with the Academy is also helping people understand that they really utilize all the lessons that they've learned in life, right? Because they might not know themselves. And some of our listeners may not be thinking, well, you might have one great gig in you still because you've got this collision of experience and still the energy to do something new.
If you have a passionate engagement in what you're doing and a curiosity, people won't necessarily notice your wrinkles. They'll notice your energy. And when someone has the right energy and people can sort of like feel that that person is energized and energizing to those around them, people sort of, you know, respond like a magnet. And that doesn't, you know, that kind of energy, yes, as you get older, maybe you don't have quite as much energy. It's true. I mean, I can say my afternoon, sometimes I'm feeling like, where's the dark chocolate? I need a little kick. But the truth is that learning how to harness that energy and that confidence, you know, one of the things that's really interesting, that Harvard's research on this has been quite interesting, is that men by the age of 50 are plateauing in their level of confidence in the workplace. They have been on an acceleration up till about age 50, and then they start feeling irrelevant. For women, they can often start feeling invisible, but women's level of confidence is growing still in their 50s and into their 60s in the workplace. Now, that confidence is really important because without that confidence and that sense of energy, yes, you can fade into the woodwork, but it is with that confidence and that humility. Again, it's curiosity and wisdom, confidence and humility. That combination, that alchemy, makes you a very present leader. And that's really what people are impressed by these days, is someone who's very present.
I really hope this is heartening for some of the people who are listening to this, not just if they're in this age group, but also if they have people around them in that age group. And we started this longevity lab after the success of our Gen Z lab. And when we looked at Edelman Trust Barometer identified, we found that Gen Z has actually sort of raised the stakes for brands and workplaces because they want to have them state their values and address societal issues. We actually see a parallel there and a sort of bookend with the findings that older generations have also said that they now approach sort of buying and work differently because of Gen Z. Do you have experience with the Academy and with the advice that you give to companies on how the sort of younger generation are kind of influencing the older consumers, older employers, employees?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what's interesting is that the demographic we're talking about, 55 to 72, is sort of the, especially the older part of that bracket, those are the hippies. Those are the people in the 1960s, 1970s who were taking to the streets. You and I are a little bit younger than that, but we were also very influenced by values and the idea that you wanted to support not just politicians, but companies that actually, you know, wore their values on their sleeve and operated from those values. And this is not just Gen Z and boomers, or it's frankly everybody, I think, today. I think older workers and older consumers, because they have more money to spend, can have a bigger impact on companies. I think where Gen Z is particularly interesting on this is this philosophy that you can cancel people based upon something and just like, we're not going to spend money with you anymore if you've said things. And I think that can be risky at times for a brand. And so brands sometimes have to toe the line. But I think what brands need to do is be a little more courageous and stick their neck out to say, this is what we stand for. And people appreciate that because many brands, frankly, are also rams. And they're just trying to sort of like be safe. And I think we live in an era where Gen Z doesn't want a brand to be safe. They want a brand, even if you disagree with the brand, they want a brand to be authentic. And I think that's still true of those of us who are older as well.
Yeah, we definitely see that in our data. It's like, I might not agree, but at least I know what you stand for. The other thing where we sort of see parallels is in the area of influencer and the world of marketing. Obviously, right now is obsessed with influencers and creators. And quite often it's almost referred to as being like the empire of the young, that's where influence and creators come from. But actually, we know that our generation has in fact got enormous influence, and they're kind of coming of age into being more influential. They are shaping industries, innovations, they have economic influence, as we've touched on. And of course, as we've already talked about, entrepreneurs come from this generation. Do you feel like with these sessions that you run and with the insights that you get from some of your attendees, what do you think are the biggest sort of misperceptions and misses that we should be aware of, and where we sort of underestimate the influence that this older generation can have and does have?
The word influencer really didn't exist in the way it does today, 20 years ago, but there have always been people of influence. And I would say that Warren Buffett in his 90s is of influence. I would say that Martha Stewart in her 80s is of influence. Jane Fonda in her 80s is of influence. So the idea of being influential has been around forever. But the packaging of influencers is what has been brilliant by the TikTokers of the world and those on Instagram, et cetera. And that's usually a younger person. But that doesn't mean older people can't, number one, use these new technologies and social media as strategy to get their message out. And it also doesn't mean necessarily that you don't have a unique message to give at an older age. I think one of the things that's been unfortunate is we've sort of packaged the idea that older people, all they care about is pharmaceutical ads or, you know, ads for cruise ships where people are going to play bingo. And if you look at the active life of a 60-year-old or a 70-year-old, what you see is somebody who frankly doesn't recognize they're 60 or 70. They still think that they're 40 or 50. And therefore, marketing to them as if they are age fluid, a term that I created, because we have gender fluid people, but age fluid people are not timeless. Timeless suggests that time is a bad thing. And it's a word we used to use, and I don't like using it because it suggests that age or time is a bad thing. Age fluid means that you're all the ages you've ever been in and will ever be. And you have a fluidity in terms of how do people see you, in terms of your chronological age. So let's recognize that there are lots of very cool influencers on TikTok and Instagram who surprise people because, quite frankly, they don't fit the stereotype we're used to. So I think in many ways, it's a real opportune time for people in this 55 to 72 age demographic to actually find their voice as an influencer on social media, because you stand out more than a 30-year-old because, frankly, you're different. You don't fit the demographic of most people who are influencers.
Yeah, I mean, I think the element of surprise in such a positive way is such a superb point to make. And we created some work for Dove, our longstanding Unilever client, around the celebration of the Dove bar under a campaign called Beauty Never Gets Old, which features the most gorgeous group of women dancing. The imagery is vibrant and vivacious. It's naughty, it's cheeky, it's beautiful. The comments and the feedback from the world of social has been off the scale, along the lines of everything that you've just outlined there. Celebration and relief and being seen and being beautiful and gorgeous, but also being real. I mean, it's in the pursuit of celebrating what is, not trying to be youthful or not trying to be anything else. It is different, and that's why. And it shouldn't be different, because it isn't different that there are that many people who are older.
Well, here's the other thing that's really important. If we're lucky, we're all going to get old, and so for us to start to portray older people in a new way helps to make maybe for some people make aging aspirational, which is a, you know, a heretical thought, but the idea that someone in their 30s or 20s or 40s or even in their teens can look at someone and say, I want to be that way someday, is really an important piece. And I do feel like we're on the way to getting there. And it does require then the media and advertising folks to actually embrace this and say, like, yeah, you can be a rebel in your 80s and it's perfectly fine. You can be Martha Stewart and be on the cover of Sports Illustrated in a bathing suit on, you know, and that's fine. And I think the juxtapositions is what makes life interesting. And the juxtaposition of old and young together in ad campaigns, I think will be even interesting, more interesting in the time to come.
We're doing this at the sort of beginning of 25, and what an extraordinary beginning it's been with various happenings around the world. And you said that the happiest years of your life actually began when you turned 50. So for those of us of a similar age or younger who want to be sort of happier, more resilient, make more of the opportunities, do you have some advice for our New Year's resolutions of what kind of intentions and goals we should be setting?
Well, I think the key, first of all, there is social science picking this up, which shows that starting around after a low point around 45 to 50, on average globally, around age 50, people get happier. And with each decade after that, they get happier and happier. So what's going on there? Why would life satisfaction be growing after age 50? In many ways, not trying to prove yourself anymore. You may start having some time affluence if you've been taking care of kids, or sometimes your aging parents are passing away as you get into 50s, 60s, 70s, as your parents are 20, 25, 35 years older than you. So you have some space in your life again. You start getting maybe a little more curious about the meaning of life. And so you ask bigger questions. And that can actually bring some joy because it actually sometimes it means that your primary operating system is moving from your ego to your soul. And that means you're like, oh, you're more curious about the world and how you fit into it. So, and you know, the most important thing to know is all the research is very clear on this, is that the number one variable that's associated with living a longer, healthier, happier life is your social relationships. And so how we invest in social wellness after age 50 is important. So what I would just say to everybody is, hitting 50 doesn't mean your best years are behind you. It could mean that your best years are ahead of you.
That is such a brilliant, brilliant way to end, Chip. I'm so grateful for your time, your brilliant wisdom, literally your wisdom that you shared with us today. Thank you so much for this brilliant, brilliant time, for sharing your wisdom with us. The insights and the expertise has been such a help and such a liberation for our longevity lab. So thank you so much for that. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.